And so, you know, with that information, and there's uncertainty in everything. There's no decisions that are perfect. But with some of the climate model results we have, we can sort of lay out areas that will become more suitable, areas that will also maintain suitability, and areas that may become unsuitable for current management practices where coffee is grown.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 2 of a 5-part series with John Abatzoglu. John, welcome back to the podcast. We're talking about the impact of climate change on coffee. And in this episode, we're going to talk about how climate is impacting coffee. In the last episode, we talked about what climate was, and now we want to kind of start getting into to what it's specifically doing with coffee. So what is it doing to coffee?
Yeah, well, we can think about sort of your sort of optimal conditions for coffee growing. Obviously, you need moisture, and we sort of think about where coffee is grown today, and it's in the tropics. Coffee is a little bit of a Goldilocks plant in that it likes it warm, but not very hot, and it really doesn't like it cold. So, you know, coffee ends up having significant intolerance to temperatures that are freezing, right? And we've seen some substantial losses in Brazil from freeze events. And then coffee also doesn't like it in places where it gets really warm. So where you get over, say, 35, 36 Celsius, that ends up being pretty damaging to coffee as well. So Goldilocks, right? It occupies this niche with the warming that we've seen, right? Which globally is about a 1.2 degrees Celsius. Remember that much of the globe is ocean. Ocean doesn't warm as fast as land. And so on land, we have a warming that's more than that, maybe closer to 1.5 Celsius.
Right. So and that sorry, can I just ask you something there? That 1.2 degrees that you were quoting there, is that an average including the ocean?
That's an average including the ocean, yeah.
So what's the land? If that's the average including the ocean, did you mention what it was just on land on average?
I want to say it's probably more like 1.5 over land. It's a lot harder to warm up the ocean.
Okay.
And then that's one of the signals we see from climate change. So I guess we got to keep in mind here when we talk about a future where the globe warms by 2 degrees Celsius or 3 degrees Celsius, that is a global average. And, you know, whatever, 70% of the world is ocean. So the land.
Wow.
So that can, you know, and when we talk about a warming, so let's just go with 1.5 Celsius.
Okay.
You can think about sort of most of the coffee being grown in places where your average mean annual temperature is between 18 and 22 Celsius.
Okay.
Now you warm things by 1.5 Celsius. So you're shifting that whole distribution. And in places that were sort of at the upper end of the sort of suitable growing areas for Arabica, some sort of Arabica here. Now you are growing coffee in a place where you're really on the margins. And there have been some studies that have basically shown that for every, you know, degree Celsius increase in temperature in places where you're growing coffee at that upper edge of the temperature threshold, every degree Celsius increase in temperature reduces sort of production by, you reduces yield by 10 to 15%.
Wowzers.
So you can begin to see sort of, you know, reductions in yield in certain areas. Now on the other side, if you're on the colder end of the coffee growing area, right? So this is the bright side of things. now that area moves into being maybe a little bit more suitable. So there's a little bit of this shift, and that'll be pretty important. We think about sort of how coffee growing areas may change in the future. They're basically, we're sort of following these lines of sort of optimal temperature, and mm-hmm. they generally move poleward, right? And then also upwards in elevation. And that's something that we certainly have seen, is that some of the, most suitable coffee growing areas for high quality coffee have basically moved uphill in the tropics, because that's the logical place to go. You can't really go north or south far enough, but you can go uphill. The problem is with mountains, as you go uphill, there's less and less area. Yeah. And so that becomes increasingly problematic. And, as you move uphill to, the optimal climates, you're also potentially invading areas that require substantial modifications in the land use, which can be problematic as well.
And other ecosystems may be operating up there.
Correct. Yeah, you would be disrupting existing ecosystems, right?
Do we think that climate is going to impact, this is left of field, but this is my field, my very first field. Do we think that climate is going to impact things on a genetic level, particularly plants? Do we know if like there's an epigenetic element that will start to activate with plants?
That's a good question. Not my area of expertise. I do know that there are some, maybe not specifically for coffee, but I know some other plant species whereby you can take a species, the same species, mm-hmm. but a cohort that is grown in a warmer climate, mm-hmm. that is basically develop additional tolerance to heat. And there are considerations now of taking the seed of plants that are grown in warmer climates
and
translocating them to places that are currently cooler but will be warmer, in the idea that climate change will happen. So this is assisted migration. I think that's the terminology, assisted migration. And so there may be things like this for coffee as well, where, there may be a cohort that is particularly resilient, tolerant to heat, and that could essentially propagate and provide an adaptation mechanism to a warmer planet.
How predictive is the direction? And I know you said that it's headed in two directions that we can sort of know. If we know, so it's going up, so climate up and to the poles. How predictable is it? Like, is it predictable enough that you could track which land you should consider migrating your own coffee crops onto? Is it that predictable?
I would say that we have pretty good ideas of how temperature will change over the next 30 years or so. We think it's going to warm, shocker. Mm-hmm. realistically, over the next 30 years, we may see about, a degree Celsius more warming. Mm-hmm. And so, with that information, and there's uncertainty in everything, there's no decisions that are perfect, but with some of the climate model results we have, we can sort of lay out areas that will become more suitable, areas that will also maintain suitability, and areas that may become unsuitable for current management practices where coffee is grown. And some of the results that studies that I'm not a part of at all, but some of them show some pretty dire results in terms of coffee suitability globally. Mm. Specifically, there are some studies that suggest that almost 50% of current coffee growing areas will become unsuitable by mid-century. So that's a pretty dire.
Did you say 50%?
50%. There are some studies that do say that. And so you can think about these as being sort of on the places that are currently growing Arabica that are sort of in the warmer edges, right? Those places will become unsuitable. The upside, if there's an upside, which maybe there is, right? The upside is that other areas may become suitable, right? So again, this is this upwards shift northwards or southwards, depending on which hemisphere you're at. One of the students in my lab is actually, we've been looking at the potential suitability of coffee growing in California.
Mm-hmm.
Not known for coffee, but there is a group that has been cultivating coffee in the south coastal portion of the state. And with climate change, we do show a slight increase in suitability. California is way, way far northward, way beyond the bean belt. But you know, realistically, there are some places where real estate is super expensive, right? Where you could cultivate coffee, but you also could cultivate, you know, multi-million dollar homes or other things there. So that is the little bit of the flip side to sort of climate change. However, you know, one thing, of course, is as you sort of have this disruptive element here, more areas may be suitable that are outside of the current coffee growing location, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the business is feasible, because you do need to set up the whole like supply chain and logistics and labor issues. And so dispersion, if you can imagine dispersion of where you can grow coffee, actually might create more complications in terms of some of the whole sort of post growing side of things.
When we talk about change, the change part in climate change, often when we're talking about change, we are looking at a lot of transitioning. We're looking at a lot of disruption. And as I hear you talk and I think about, you know, coffee farms starting in California and labor issues, et cetera, I think usually what follows after change is some kind of stabilization. And when I was a kid in the 80s, you know, everything kind of seemed to be normal with regards to the climate. Every year was the same sort of kind of weather. And I don't see that now at all. But back then it was this kind of calm and stable and whatnot. As we go into this era of change, do we foresee an era where stability is reached after all of this change? Do we have the luxury of considering that at this point?
Great question. Yeah, that's a great question. I guess I can answer it from the context of at least the climate system itself.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the easiest point of entry here. When we talk about climate change, the trajectory that we are on basically would consider continual change, no stabilization, right? Stabilization is possible, right? But it would require that we effectively stabilize greenhouse gas emissions and greenhouse gas concentrations, I should say, greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere. And right now, like, even if we stabilize emissions, so globally, I think we're emitting something on the order of 10 gigatons of carbon per year. Big number. Sounds big number. 10 gigatons of carbon per year. Even if we keep that status quo, what we have right now is more carbon going into the atmosphere each year than carbon that's leaving the atmosphere. And that allows for the levels of atmospheric carbon to continue to rise through time. And with that, we would expect that climate would also continue to get warmer through time. There is a scenario that, assuming that we do some mitigation, right, reduce carbon dioxide emissions, increase what we call carbon dioxide sinks, ways we can pull carbon out of the atmosphere. There is a scenario where climate can be stabilized at some point, maybe by the end of the 21st century, maybe a little bit earlier. If everybody gets their act together, which is probably kind of unlikely, right? But there may
he
be
he says
some...
in 2024, in the year of an election in the United States. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some optimism, but
good luck with that also. Sorry, I lived there for a long time.
No worries, yeah.
So the interesting thing that I see about that is we talk about the destabilization of coffee,
as an agricultural product from an economic perspective. And people are looking to rip out their coffee trees because the price of coffee is being destabilized. And we have a lot of volatility at the moment. And in some countries, they're replacing those trees with eucalyptus and with other crops. But the one thing about coffee is very, very good at capturing carbon out of the atmosphere. And so when you rip up those coffee trees or they're destroyed by other crops, from a climate perspective, when we don't have the luxury at the moment of being able to look at that and say, well, like, what carbon are we not taking out of the atmosphere by having coffee? What's the cost, the opportunity cost of doing that? And often right now, the opportunity cost doesn't seem worth paying because we got to feed people as opposed to thinking about the carbon that's coming out of the atmosphere. There's just so many complex layers to all of this, and it's all happening at the same time.
Yeah, and I think this is the reason that climate change does not have a simple answer to it. Mm. So I think there have been other global environmental challenges. The ozone hole is one that some of your
Australian
So the ozone hole is a great example whereby scientists identified that the ozone hole was increasing. Ozone is important for reducing the amount of ultraviolet light reaching the surface, yeah, which is harm to every living thing. And the atmospheric chemist said, oh, well, we believe that it is certain man-made gases called chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, that are implicated. The good news about chlorofluorocarbons, which is hard to say three times in a row, is that only a really small sector of the economy relied on them. And so it was fairly easy to implement a global policy to phase those out in sort of high performing countries immediately, and to mm-hmm. then have a delayed phase out in countries that had less economic ability. And the ozone hole has stabilized now. It's a really, really long-lived greenhouse gas. It doesn't get fixed instantly, but we're no longer putting that gas up into the atmosphere. Ozone hole is stabilized. And at some point here, you know, maybe in 20, 30 years, we will see a recovery in that ozone hole. So
really?
Yeah. So that's an example of a global problem that scientists, again, like they identified the cause, they implemented a global solution to, the solution has been implemented, things are working, but it doesn't have the complexity that climate change has because much of our world relies on fossil fuel. And, you know, deforestation is another part of sort of climate change, right? Taking carbon from living biomass, burning it. Deforestation has petered out a little bit, right? We saw a lot of that in sort of the late 20th century. And for other reasons, deforestation has also decreased a bit. That is still a contributor to climate change. But today, the main culprit is that fossil fuel part. And it's just not, like you said, it's much more complex than the ozone.
My twin sister was on the podcast and she works in energy transition. And I learned something from her that I didn't know. And I wonder, when we're talking about deforestation, she was helping me understand that the older a tree gets, the less carbon it pulls out of the atmosphere. And younger plants, as they grow, they pull more carbon out of the atmosphere. So when we deforest something, if we replant that forest, can that replenish the damage? Can it be better than having the forest there in the first place?
Yeah, possibly. So these are we call them nature-based solutions, basically ways to take carbon out of the atmosphere. In the forestry sector, certainly this idea of reforestation or afforestation can help, right? As you grow trees that are appropriate for the climate that they're growing in.
Right.
There have been bad stories about, you know, carbon offsets that have gone the wrong way because they planted the wrong trees in the wrong environment.
Oh.
Absolutely, like, you know, these reforestation programs can help sequester carbon, take up carbon that's in the atmosphere and have that carbon be stored in woody biomass of a tree. And some of that can go into soil and it gets locked away, assuming that that tree doesn't burn up in a forest. It's perfect. So many, so much complexity. There are these, in certain areas, California has invested in carbon offset programs that have, basically large forestry projects in California, in Oregon, in Canada. And several of these carbon offset programs have gone up in smoke because of recent wildfires. So there's always something to consider, right? So these nature-based solutions can work, but nothing is certain.
Circle of life.
Apparently, yes.
Apparently. All right. So in the next episode, we are going to lean heavily into what we just talked about, and we're going to talk about carbon, agriculture, and climate change. I'm loving this conversation. Thank you, John. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.